Let's check now what the numbers look like in Chicago at the CME Group, and more importantly at this hour, what the quarterly Hogs and Pigs report showed. On the phone line with us from Atchison, Kansas, at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, is Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And let's go through the quarterly Hogs and Pigs numbers. They were released at 2 o'clock Central Time. What'd they say?
Big shocker. No expansion yet, but it's coming. All Hogs and Pigs, June 1, 95%. 1% lower than the lowest trade guess. Kept for breeding, 100%, 1% lower than the lowest trade guess. Kept for marketing, 95%, about a half percent below the lowest trade guess. Makes sense. The marketing's number would be lower since the other two were as well, Todd. But essentially, when you go through the weight breakdown, March to May farrowings at 100% is about 2% lower than the lowest trade guess out there. And yet the September to November farrowings at 104 were 1% higher than the highest trade guess. So USDA saying tight supply on all hogs and pigs June 1, no extra kept for breeding, same breeding inventory as last year at this time. But as we get to September, November, look for big expansion in the farrowings.
How do you know that they're looking for big expansion in the farrowings in that late time frame? What is the number that tells you that?
That 104 for the SEPNO farrowings. That was a full percentage point above the highest trade guess.
Right. Sorry, I didn't write that down, and I don't have them in front
of me. No problem.
Okay. So that will mean probably something, I would think, by the time we get to the grain stocks report on Monday morning, and maybe not something very good.
Well, it's hard to say because we have been feeding out to record weights, and so that has to be looked at when it comes to the actual pork production, and the exports have really come on strong in the month of May, and it looks like they're still very, very strong this month. They were up something like 80% above their four-week average on this weekly export sales, and beef was right behind it in terms of a big jump versus the four-week average. So you may not see this any more than a neutral report for the corn, depending on if we continue with some really heavy weights and the demand for pork continues to outstrip the demand for beef.
Have you done enough in terms of calculating numbers and how much more grain it takes, corn that is, it takes to feed these out to the heavier weights and at this level of hogs that are all around, what that really means? And I know that would have to have been probably done ahead of time, and it would just have been a guess on your part.
Yeah, I have not. I think that the key number is the all hogs and pigs as of June 1 at 95% of last year. It says we have been keeping marketings very, very tight and very, very current, even though we've been adding weights. And I don't know if the market will have the trade and the analysis side of the equation will have difficulty with that or not, Todd, trying to understand that. But
Let me think about that because it just popped in my mind. So what that really means, and maybe we should go back through this again, is that we've got 95% of the numbers that are going into the marketplace today that we did at the same time last year, but they're probably heavier than they were last year. Is that right?
Exactly right. Okay. And that's where your PED virus is showing up big time. So I think that's where the analysts are going to have to really look in between the sheets here.
Okay, so this makes some sense to me, I think. So if we were thinking about PED, which is supposed to take out 10% of an infected herd.
Exactly. Of the young piglet.
Of the young piglet.
Right.
And if we think, and I'm not sure that this isn't really the case, about half of the herd in the United States is infected. That would give us a 5% number. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I think, you know, on the surface it does. I'm sure there's probably some number crunching that would say it can't be that close to being right, but I think it's within the realm of possibility given a government report. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, I don't know that I've actually ever seen a number that says how much of the herd is
Tyson and some of the big pork and poultry operators, the vertical integrated people, were talking in their last quarterly updates when they were doing their conference calls, and I was listening in on that. They were talking numbers of 4, 5, 6%, you know, and numbers like that, or 4 to 8 million head, or something like that. So it's within, I think, the general expectation because we are starting to see some of the herds get it twice now, and so it would be probably at least 5% of the herd by the time we get to June 1 of this year.
Yeah, so once we get to the beginning of the cool down again, when it's supposed to start back up, that number, when you look at the 104%, holy smokes, that could mean a whole lot because the second time around on the infection, I think it's about half the kill rate. So that could be, there could be some big numbers.
Yeah, I mean, you could essentially go from a planning 104% to where it's back to 95% because you'd be hitting that much more of the potential numbers if this vaccine did not do what it's billed to do. So that's where a lot of the science is still way ahead of us. And I guess when you add what you and I have been talking at here the last 5 minutes, if you take this report at face value, it'd be probably pretty unwise to drop the pork price very much or drop the hog price very much at the producer level, because packers, wholesalers, retailers will probably want you to keep feeding out. So in that respect, I guess I couldn't put it any worse than a neutral report for the corn and the meal.
All right. So we have hogs finishing up the August contract at 129.82.5, and is there more upside potential then?
I think so. I think the choice box beef was up another $1.40 today, and we know we're running $246, $247 on the choice box beef, so there's very little competition out there. I think the chick placements were only up 1% again on the last report I saw. So I would think that you would have the livestock sector looking at the hogs and saying, why don't we go up there and at least test those old highs, especially since the feeders made some new record highs this past week.
Yeah, the feeders, live cattle going in, at least in their August contract, to new contract highs too. There are lots of highs.
Yeah,
they just keep coming.
To me, it seems pretty hard to assume that the live hogs will make a high before the feeder cattle. So that's kind of generally how I'm looking at it.
What did you see in the way of the trade for corn and soybeans on the day?
You know, it was a lot like this past week. The spreading was very, very active. The July Nov bean spread was up 20 cents on a return to the strong demand, strong exports, and a jump back in the spot meal basis. July SEP wheat, however, got within 2.5 cents of an inversion again, thanks to the hard red wheat harvest not being so great, quality issues pushing up the cash bids and soft wheat. July D's corn, however, went back to carrying charge for the first time since the 1st of March. So we saw a lot of spread activity. Makes sense given that we're going into the end of the quarter. First notice day, and obviously these two big reports.
And your look forward to the reports, what do you see on Monday morning?
You know, taking it a step back into the big picture, Todd, I'm still looking at that cycle low. I'm still seeing that four of the last 5 years, July wheat made a low in early June, and the only year it did not do that was 2009, and the low was made on July 7th. 2009 would be the worst-case scenario for the corn, where we dropped about 60 cents from the June report to mid-July. And that, other than that, corn reacts fairly good after the June report once we look at the last 5 years, if the wheat bottoms first. So stochastics, oscillators, cycles, seasonals all suggest to me, along with some of these other commodity complexes like the energies, the metals, the livestock, all been big buyers here of the funds, and the investment flows have been coming in. So it would seem to me that unless the USDA really gives us a shocker and a bearish report, we should have a wheat-led cycle low coming in after the report.
Some of the outside things that you might have considered through the day, the CBO had a report on the RFS looking forward. What do you think of that one?
I don't think that made that market too happy, because they essentially said if you don't change EPA, you're going to make gas prices go up. So I do think that had a little bit of an effect on the spreads this week and today especially, because I haven't gotten through the report. I've only gotten through the summary of it, but the way I read it from just a perception of it was, if the EPA doesn't change anything, then gas prices are going up, and that may cause the Obama administration to want to rethink not going ahead and reducing it so that they can theoretically bring gas prices back down, especially in light of what's going on in Iraq. So short-term feature to this trade, I think, for sure today.
Did I read this correctly? And I've been trying to go through it some during the day, too, but it's Friday and it's always busy, and I know you are as well, that it was based mostly on the inability of the nation to provide enough cellulosic ethanol to meet the advanced fuels, and that the number of ethanol gallons would be fine. It was just that you couldn't provide the advanced number or the cellulosic ethanol into the marketplace to make it all work.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to that 10% blend going into 2017. One of the big headlines I saw was meeting the total volumes of advanced biofuels specified in ISA would require extremely large increases in the production of those fuels. And I think that's where they tried to make that correlation, that because the advanced biofuels meaning the cellulosic is not there yet. They're going to have to go back and produce even more of the corn-blended ethanol.
Ukraine in the news today, too. That not because there's fighting happening. I'm sure there's something going on, but they signed an agreement with the European Union today.
Yes, and that actually worsens and increases the tensions between them and Russia, and it would probably provoke Russia more, and that's something that we're going to have to watch over the weekend because Russia has been still ramping up troops along the border, and that story is not played out yet at all, Todd, so I think there's still an issue where maybe the market's right by pulling out geopolitical risk over the last couple weeks in the soft red wheat, but I think here at this point in time, you probably wouldn't want to take too much more out until you knew any much more than you do now.
And I looked at a Grains Council item today that finally put it into my mind why meal had been going up so much and what it had to do with the DDGs that are setting in China somewhat, 90,000 million metric tons or something that needs to be exported out of that country. They came in as imports from the United States, I suppose, and they've got to go out someplace, right?
Yeah, and China has had a substantially big increase in meal exports as well over the last 2 months, and so you do have a new competitor on the block here in the short term because of China's recent decisions. I think that is certainly something that hurt the meal price here. I want to think that it's been worked in, and I want to think that the USDA still has to answer some questions about the demand come the grain stocks report on Monday. And here again, I think that's why the bull spread was able to make back about 20 cents, and you all of a sudden saw July meal close back above 450 by quite a bit.